Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. It's terrific Tuesday, December 13th, 2011. Another wonderful day to be alive. Another wonderful day to be filling our minds with ideas that will change our souls and expand us and help us grow and move forward and be better able to conquer all obstacles that come in our path and kick them out of the way and achieve wonderful, amazing, stupendous results in our lives. So congratulations for being on the call here. This is the Think and Grow Rich call. And today, I'm excited. We're going to jump right into the content because we have an incredible, miraculous story to go through here to finish out, or close to finish out, Chapter 2 in the book Think and Grow Rich. And we have a professional speaker to guide us through this chapter, Mr. Bill Hartraft. Are you on the line with me, sir?
Yes, I'm right here, Paul. Good morning, everybody. Yes, this morning we're going to go through Desire Outwits Mother Nature. And, wow, what a profound story. And this hits very close to home for me, that's for sure. I mean, certainly the story is different, but I went through a similar thing with doctors, as you'll soon hear. The name of the chapter, or this part of the book, is Desire Outwits Mother Nature, and it's a little bit of a read, so bear with me here. As a fitting climax to this chapter, I wish to introduce one of the most unusual persons I've ever known. I first saw him 24 years ago, a few minutes after he was born. He came into the world without any physical sign of ears, and the doctor admitted, when pressed for an opinion, that the child might be deaf and mute for life. I challenged the doctor's opinion. I had the right to do so. I was the child's father. I, too, reached a decision and rendered an opinion, but I expressed the opinion silently in the secrecy of my own heart. I decided that my son would hear and speak. Nature could send me a child without ears. Nature could not induce me to accept the reality of the affliction. In my own mind, I knew that my son would hear and speak. How? I was sure there must be a way, and I knew I would find it. I thought of the words of the immortal Emerson. The whole course of things goes to teach us faith. We need only obey. Obey. There is guidance for each of us, and by lowly listening, we shall hear the right word. The right word? Desire. More than anything else, I desired that my son should not be deaf, mute. From that desire, I never receded, not for a second. Many years previously, I had written, "Our only limitations are those we set up in our own minds." For the first time, I wondered if that statement were true. Lying on the bed in front of me was a newly born child without the natural equipment of hearing. Even though he might hear and speak, he was obviously disfigured for life. Surely, this was a limitation which that child had not set up in his own mind. What could I do about it? Somehow I would find a way to transplant into that child's mind my own burning desire for ways and means of conveying sound to his brain without the aid of ears. As soon as the child was old enough to cooperate, I would fill his mind so completely with a burning desire to hear that nature would, by methods of her own, translate it into physical reality. All this thinking took place in my own mind, but I spoke of it to no one. Every day I renewed the pledge I had made to myself not to accept a deaf mute for a son. As he grew older and began to take notice of things around him, we observed that he had a slight degree of hearing. When he reached the age when children usually begin talking, he made no attempt to speak, but we could tell by his actions that he could hear certain sounds slightly. That was all I wanted to know. I was convinced that if he could hear, even slightly, he might develop still a greater hearing capacity. Then something happened which gave me hope. It came from an entirely unexpected source. We bought a Victrola. That's a record player for those of you that don't know. When the child heard the music for the first time, he went into ecstasies and promptly appropriated the machine. He soon showed a preference for certain records. Among them, It's a Loving Way to Tipperary. On one occasion, he played that piece over and over and over again, almost for 2 hours, standing in front of the Victrola with his teeth clamped on the edge of the case. The significance of this self-formed habit of his did not become clear to us until years afterward, for we had never heard of the principle of bone conduction of sound at that time. Shortly after he appropriated the Victrola, I discovered that he could hear me quite clearly when I spoke with my lips touching his mastoid bone, or at the base of his brain, of the brain. These discoveries placed in my possession the necessary media by which I began to translate into reality my burning desire to help my son develop hearing and speech. By that time, he was making stabs at speaking certain words. The outlook was far from encouraging, but desire backed by faith, knows no such words are impossible. Having determined that he could hear the sound by my voice plainly, I began immediately to transfer his mind to the desire to hear and speak. I soon discovered that the child enjoyed bedtime stories, so I went to work, creating stories designed to develop him in self-reliance, imagination, and a keen desire to hear and to be normal. There was one story in particular, which I emphasized by giving it some new and dramatic coloring each time it was told. It was designed to plant in his mind the thought that his affliction was not a liability, but an asset of great value. Despite the fact that all the philosophy I had examined clearly indicated that every adversity brings with it the seed of an equivalent advantage. So in other words, every time we face difficulty in life, nature brings a seed of advantage, equivalent advantage. That's what we were looking for yesterday, Paul. I must confess that I had not the slightest idea how this affliction could ever become an asset. However, I continued my practice of wrapping that philosophy in bedtime stories, hoping the time would come when he would find some plan by which his handicap could be made to serve some useful purpose. Reason told me plainly that there was no adequate compensation for lack of ears and natural hearing equipment. Desire, backed by faith, pushed reason aside and inspired me to carry on. As I analyze the experience in retrospect, I can see now that my son's faith in me had much to do with the astounding results. He did not question anything I told him. I sold him the idea that he had a distinct advantage over his older brother and that his advantage would reflect itself in many ways. For example, the teachers in school would observe that he had no ears, and because of this, they would show him special attention and treat him with extraordinary kindness. They always did. His mother saw to that by visiting the teachers and arranging with them to give the child the extra attention necessary. I sold him the idea, too, that when he became old enough to sell newspapers, his older brother had already become a newspaper merchant, he would have a big advantage over his brother for the reason that people would pay him extra money for his wares because they could see that he was a bright, industrious boy, despite the fact he had no ears. We could notice that. Gradually, the child's hearing was improving. Moreover, he had not the slightest tendency to be self-conscious because of his affliction. He was born with it. When he was about 7, he showed the first evidence that our method of servicing his mind was bearing fruit. For several months, he begged for the privilege of selling newspapers, but his mother would not give her consent. She was afraid that his deafness made it unsafe for him to go out on the street alone. Finally, he took matters into his own hands. One afternoon, when he was left at home with the servants, he climbed through the kitchen window, shimmied to the ground, and set out on his own. He borrowed 6 cents in capital from his neighborhood shoemaker, invested it in papers, sold out, reinvested, and kept repeating until late in the evening. After balancing his accounts and paying back the 6 cents he had borrowed from his banker, he had a net profit of 42 cents. When we got home that night, we found him in bed asleep with the money tightly clenched in his hand. Well, I'm going to end it there because this chapter goes on for quite a while, if that's all right with you, unless you want me to continue. Paul?
No, that's fine. We can definitely stop there. I think we've got a lot to talk about.
It's just this goes on. I could probably take up another 15 minutes of the call with the end of this chapter. But it's very powerful. I mean, there's a lot of information there. How it relates to me, like I said before, is that, you know, in 96 when that gang assault happened to me and that carjacking, those guys broke my jaw in three different places. And at the time, I was a national speaker. I was the head trainer for a publicly held company that had over 100,000 distributors. And so I was going all over this nation to major cities giving trainings and talks almost every weekend and, you know, on Saturdays. And on November 23rd, 1996, I was attacked by a gang as a gang initiation had a completely random assault, and they broke my jaw in three different places. And so when I went to the hospital and saw the maxillofacial doctors and everybody, they said, you know, you need to get out of the speaking profession. You will not be able to speak comfortably ever, ever again, ever. And I said, but that's, you know, I'm 32, 37 years old. I'd built my whole life around speaking. Matter of fact, I started this business by myself. This is my business. This is me. This is who I am. This is the talent that I was given. I need to do this. And they said, sorry, but the up and down movement of your mandibular joints are so badly broken, and I don't think that the prostheses, these are the doctors talking, that the prostheses that we can put in there will ever aid you in being able to smoothly, you know, make words and speak. And I said, forget it, you're wrong, you're wrong. I don't care what you say. I made it up in my mind. I said, there's no way. I started to cry. I was like, there's no freaking way these guys are going to stop me from doing what I love to do, helping other people. And by golly, it took a long time. You know, my mouth, my jaw was wired. I had major surgeries. All the surgeries were done from inside my mouth because my good old mom, loved her to death, she didn't want my my pretty boy looks taken away from surgeries on the outside of my face, either that or grow a beard, right? And you know, I went through years and years of recovery, many, many moons of where I couldn't talk at all. Unbelievable TMJ and unbelievable headaches, just unbelievable stuff. I lost all the teeth on my upper part of my jaw, my upper mouth. I didn't lose them, but they were all cracked, and so they all had to be fixed. And it was horrible. And so for years, you made it up in my mind that I'm getting this back. I did not let it take me down. I did not let it, I just kept it in my mind that I am going to be able to talk again. And I kept exercising my jaw. And every time they put a new mandibular joint in on the right side or the left side, I would exercise, chew gum, do whatever I could do to strengthen those muscles. And finally, February 14th of this last year, I mean, here, 15 years later, I finally see this wonderful female surgeon here in Florida who I'd searched out and searched out and searched out, and she said she could once and for all fix my jaw after she saw my x-rays. And nobody else admitted that they could fix it, and she said she could. $30,000 in cash. I didn't have that right at my fingertips, so I had to go work to find that. And when I found it, I got it. She fixed my jaw. She said, about 6 weeks, and you should be able to talk fine. And, oh, my God, listen to me. I get no headaches from talking anymore. Do you realize every time I used to open my mouth, Paul, I used to get these horrific headaches right up the side into my right ear and into my head. And what a miracle. What a miracle. So this story really hits home for me. I'm all welled up right now just thinking about it because I went through a lot of pain and a lot of suffering, but I did not give up on what I wanted out of my life. So, Paul, I'll hand it to you because I'm starting to lose it. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. And you reminded me a couple of lines from the story. Napoleon said that he had written many years ago, our only limitations are those we set up in our own minds. And he wondered if that was true when he started working with his son. And his son, another line, his son didn't question anything he told him, and Napoleon started planting ideas in his mind. That story, as we'll finish out tomorrow, and Bill's story that you just shared with us, Bill, both of those stories illustrate that the power of desire and the power of faith many times is much, much stronger than the nature. And sometimes we think that, these limits that we have imposed on us by what we think we can't do or what other people say is impossible. And we've had this discussion before, are there really limits? Are there really limits to what you can accomplish? Sure, there's natural law and this and that. Well, I'll tell you, every time somebody says there's something that can't be done, or almost every time, we can find a story of a miracle person or a miracle situation where something has been done that was previously said to be impossible. I'm reminded also, as you share your story, Bill, and as we hear this first part of the story from the book Think and Grow Rich, I learned about a man over the weekend called Morris Goodman, I think is his name. And Morris Goodman was an insurance salesman from Texas who developed a love of flying. Well, he crashed his plane, broke almost every bone in his body, including his skull, and he became paralyzed. And he eventually learned to walk again, despite what everybody thought. All the doctors, when he was first taken in the hospital, no one believed that he would live, but he did. And even though he was in a coma, he kept hanging on. His family knew that he enjoyed Zig Ziglar and his philosophy of life, so they brought him in a tape recorder and played Ziglar's tapes and inspirational messages over and over again for Morris. And, everyone said, there's no way he's going to die. And then when he started to live, they said, well, he'll never walk again. His whole body's crushed. And in his mind, he said, I will walk out of this hospital. And using the power of the mind and using the power of faith, the guy walked out, and now he travels the country and speaks to people about, the power of the mind. You can look him up on Google, Morris Goodman, the Miracle Man. So just real powerful examples. Bill's example, the story of Napoleon's son born without ears, and even more miraculous as we finish out the story and you hear the latter part of what happens in this young man's life. Our only limitations are those we set up in our own minds. And again, these couple of lines from the story remind me, he didn't question anything Napoleon told him. He accepted those ideas that Napoleon gave him as truth and had this rock-solid belief in his dad. And because of that, those ideas that Napoleon planted became unshakable. They became ideas of faith and of belief. And this is a good example of how we, Cindy yesterday asked the question, how do we develop faith in ourselves? Well, this is one example of how we can develop faith in ourselves and faith in our goal, is we plant these ideas in our mind that we believe to be true. And part of the process is you got to think about them, you got to ponder them, you've got to, turn them over in your own mind and in your own heart. Because if you accept them as true and you continue to repeat them to yourselves, eventually you're going to develop this faith, this incredible power that seems to outwit Mother Nature and overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles. So, powerful story. Excited to finish it up tomorrow. Bill, thanks so much for sharing your story with us here today. I know that that's a very emotional thing for you to do, and we appreciate it because it very succinctly illustrates these principles that we're all learning together. So I'm going to go ahead. Okay, my friends, press *6 if you would like to unmute your line and make a comment, ask a question, have a little discussion.
I just want to add, I think it's interesting, Paul, that another thing this chapter speaks about is how children or different people will have afflictions, and people will pay them more attention, and that's definitely true. That's a very profound statement. When the young boy who didn't have years of selling newspapers, people would spend more time with him and see that he was an industrious worker, and they would pay more attention to him and give him bigger tips.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was extremely profound.
Yeah, and how easy is it? How easy would it have been, Bill, for you know, when you have a handicap or something that appears to be negative on the surface, how easy is it for you to say, oh, man, I can't do things because this is holding me down. This is handicapping me. And it's that, it's
well,
that little twit.
The difference, too, though, Paul, is that society, he didn't have a chance to have society program him in any way.
Right.
Because he was born with this affliction. So that's a positive, too. He didn't know what his affliction was because he was born that way. So he had to learn how to grow old with it.
Unfortunately, he had a father who understood the power of the mind and, sculpted and shaped his mind from a very young age rather than letting society
Absolutely.
Do it. So, and it's something we can all do. That's the beauty of this call. That's the beauty of this journey that we're all on of self-discovery and self-sculpting and molding and shaping, is that even though we've all been suggested or subjected to programming from society, from the media, from, external factors, no matter where we are in our lives, as soon as we make the decision to wake up and start to sculpt our own beliefs and shape our own subconscious minds, we can do that. We have that power, and that's exciting for me.
It's extremely exciting.
Any comments, anyone? Questions?
Paul, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, this is Mike from Maryland.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to say thank you for your call. I appreciate you and Bill's time. And also I wanted to just share a little bit. A couple days ago, I listened to the call, last week, and I set up the power of positive thinking and start focusing on, I'm going to have more money's going to come in. People are going to be open to what we're doing. And yesterday, a check showed up in the mail that didn't even know was coming. So I just wanted to share that it does work if we think positive, and we don't always know where it's going to come from, but we just have to just rely that, what we're learning is true and it will work if we apply it. And, it's not the goal that I set for the month, but it gets me closer to the goal.
Awesome. Mike, thanks so much for sharing that. Really appreciate that story. And, I over the weekend I watched The Secret. I know everyone's probably heard of The Secret or seen it. And that's a whole question I'd love to delve into another day, the power of focusing on something and this idea of the law of attraction. Do we really attract things into our lives by simply putting them in our mind? That's a whole other topic and discussion that I'd love to have. So thanks for sharing that experience. That's great, Mike.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone else? Going once, going twice. All right. Well, listen, I love each of you. I want you to know that I do believe in you. I know Bill believes in himself and me and everyone on the call. We believe in you. We know you have power within you. We know you have greatness within you. And just really honored and excited to be on this journey of discovering that greatness that each of us has within us and helping each other to bring it out so that we can be a positive force in our own lives and in the lives of those around us. So thanks for being on the call. Let's get out there, make it a great day. Let's have faith. Let us not take other people's limiting beliefs upon our own lives. Let us have empowering beliefs. Let us take action. Let us have a plan, and let us work that plan and plow through temporary setbacks and temporary defeats that might come in our paths, and let us look forward with vision to the ideal place we call the good life on the other side of where we're headed here with our temporary setbacks and so forth. So let's get out there and make it a great day. Love you guys, and we'll see you back on the call tomorrow morning. Have a great day.